Susie Wales, good morning to you.
Good morning, Catherine.
Our science commentator today, and we haven't tripped you up with the headphones trick, have we, Rachel? Yes, we have. Well rescued. Thank you, hon. It put our sports commentator, we actually had an incident with that once. Susie, microbial silk.
Yes, I want to talk about spider silk. And so it's this, incredible material, strong and lightweight, scientists say could be used to make all sorts of useful things like tear-resistant clothing and aerospace components. And so that means that scientists have been trying to harvest silk for quite some time. But there's just one problem, and that's getting enough of it. And I love the way, so this is a recent paper that just sort of describes that, getting silk out of spiders, you don't get much from a single spider. And having to breed lots of spiders is clearly not something that these researchers wanted to try. So what they did was engineered a photosynthetic bacterium to produce basically one of the proteins that's the main component of silk from the, what's the name of the spider? It's a golden silk orb weaver. So I presume from that name they actually make quite good webs and things. And what they showed was by tweaking the gene sequence, they were basically able to get this bacterium to make this protein, essentially using artificial seawater, bicarbonate salt, nitrogen gas, yeast extract, and near-infrared light. That's all you needed was this engineered bacterium and those ingredients, and you could basically produce these sort of fibers that were very similar to those naturally produced by spiders. So it was a pilot experiment. They ended up with, I think they said, 9 litres of this bacterial culture, and from that they managed to purify 10 milligrams, which then got me looking at, so what's 10 milligrams? And I was like, what's that in the kind of relation to the weight of a spider? It's probably about the weight of a spider. So it's not much. But I guess the point about bacteria is that you could have litres and litres and litres of these. And so that would be much handier than lots and lots and lots of spiders, and then how you'd have to get the silk out the spiders. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. You could basically get bacteria to make spider silk.
That, well, they need a better reputation than they've got at the moment, haven't they, on all sorts of fronts?
Well, yes, indeed.
It is one of the most incredible things in nature. You've just reminded me of an interview I wanted to do years ago with an expert on spiders and silkworms, and this was about, his name was, what was his name? They called him Spider-Man, Don Jarvis, I think. And these were GE silkworms that produced silk that was much, much stronger and could be used for all sorts of things. But it's one of nature's, this is where we get into biomimicry in some ways, isn't it? It's one of nature's most amazing inventions, don't you think?
Yeah, and they also talked about that, not only is it like really lightweight and really strong, but they called it biocompatible. So they thought that it's possibly a material you could also make things that need to go inside the body out of as well.
Artificial limbs and things.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. So it just seems amazing. But I just have this vision of people trying to harvest. How do you harvest silk from a spider? Do they want you to have their silk? How much would you get? And what I liked about this experiment was they, so they got this 9 litres of these bacteria. What they do is they put a sort of a gene sequence on the end of this gene that gives this a little tag that allows them when they basically, you can essentially centrifuge the bacteria and end up with all the kind of cell mass that then allows you to take the particular protein you're interested out of it. And so what they end up describing is having this, basically the cell mass that's got the protein that you want in it. They add some things to dissolve everything else, and then they just describe how they use forceps to hand draw the silk threads out of this then kind of mass of stuff.
Incredible. We'll talk about the ears in a moment, but do you want to have a quick say about herd immunity? Of course, we've been talking about it a lot in the context of COVID and when and whether and how it will be achieved, but of course we've got it for all sorts of other things. And what is it you wanted to touch on today?
So the thing I actually wanted to touch on is how awful a phrase it is. That, it's being, so the idea about herd immunity is that we don't just, we are vaccinated and that protects us from disease, but the more of us that are vaccinated, vaccinated, the more we can protect those who can't be vaccinated, whether that's because they're, you know, newborn babies or because they have some kind of, you know, disease that means that vaccination would be not safe for them. And so this was a phrase that was coined in 100 years ago, actually related to cattle. But it sort of conjures up all the wrong images, I think, of what this type of immunity really is. And so there's a move to start calling it community immunity, that we are basically collectively working together to protect our, you know, our whānau. And I think the reason I wanted to bring it up was that, you know, we've got all of this stuff in the news around, you know, the search for vaccines for COVID, but we have all these incredible vaccines already. And people may have, because of our lockdown and because of everything that's happened, they might not be up to date with all their vaccines. And so I guess it's just a chance to say it's never too late to get vaccinated against the, you know, to protect our communities from the diseases that we already have and that we, you know, we have not eliminated. And so if you missed anything during lockdown, you know, or if you think, you know, oh, it's too late to get that, it's never too late, because we really want to protect from, you know, everything that we know exists
already,
and that we can protect against.
And here's the thing, though. When I think of herd immunity, I don't think of cattle. I think of elephants, and I think of how gentle and loving they are towards their young, and how they operate very much as a community, and with such care. So when I hear herd immunity, think elephants, don't think cattle. and just remember how hard we've worked to get rid of so much. Now, shall we finish with the ears, please? What's
Let's
the story
do.
About? How can we move our ears?
Yeah, well, some people can do this quite well, actually, twitching their ears. But the idea is that, you know, when I've got a cat, and, you know, if you kind of make a funny noise, even if she seems fast asleep, her ears will move, right? She's basically noise when, and she's using her ears to try and locate it. And so the idea was, can people do this too? And so these researchers from Germany and the USA attached sensors around people's ears to detect the really minute electrical signals that are going on that show whether muscles are moving. And they basically then put speakers around people's heads, and they then play different sounds at them kind of unexpectedly from different directions. And what they showed was, through the electrical signals, that people do kind of twitch their ears to try and help locate the sound. But of course, the movement is so minute that we wouldn't normally see it. And they think it's kind of a leftover thing. So it would have been a trait, you know, that our ancestors had a long time ago. This is the thing that we share with lots of animals, but somehow we've lost it. The other thing they also did, which was quite cool and made it look a bit eerie, was they also filmed people's ears. And
the
go. And they had, so they could then use this kind of cool video technique to amplify the movements that were there. So there were movements, but they weren't ones that we could really see. And you can see on these videos then them kind of amplified. And people really do, like, move, you know, subtly move the bits of your ear back if you're trying to hear a sound behind you or up, you know. And it was just, go and check out these videos. It's really quite weird. There should be a link to the paper on the website.
We shall get them up. It's not quite as dramatic then. But we were just pondering whether it's genetic, how much you can move your ears, you know, about curling tongues and things.
Yeah, I imagine it is. What's kind of cool, so everyone might be thinking, well, what the hell's the point? What the researchers are actually hoping to do is basically to develop better hearing aids, because if they can use a way of basically registering and interpreting what you are hearing, they might be able to get the wearer to, you know, their hearing aid to then focus on those sounds and drown out the things that are coming from other places, which is really, really cool.
This precision thing, it was like the knee surgery we were talking about yesterday that uses AI to personalise all your data to get the surgery precise. There's so much potential for personal medicine. Susie, thank you as always. Susie Wiles.